This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, speaking with Professor Michael McFaul, former ambassador to the, at one time, Russian Federation, at one time, the Soviet Union. They're both Russia. So I can slip in my language because I'm a little older and I grew up under the Soviet version of Russia.
Right.
We now have the Russia. We now have the Federation version of Russia. It's 1990-91, and a young graduate student named Michael McFaul is in Moscow while the whole world is watching an experiment by a man named Mikhail Gorbachev, who inherits the big boss role of the Soviet Communist Party because of the deaths of three very aged and very unchanging men. They're gone. Gorbachev is in charge, and he's got ideas, glasnost and perestroika. That translates into reaching out to the United States. There's a background to this, and before we plunge into what happened in Moscow in 1990-91, Michael, détente, 1972, Richard Nixon and Leonid Brezhnev. Is that now considered a success when you reflect upon dealing with autocrats?
That's a great question. I think it's a very contested debate in my world. Some people blame that period for prolonging the Soviet Union. I don't. I think it was a successful policy for at the time to advance American national interests. And I always like to emphasize that your job when you work for the United States of America in the U.S. government is to advance our national interest, our security, our prosperity, our values, not other countries. And I think that was a wise strategy at the time. I think there's some lessons from that period for how to deal with the Chinese today. Maybe we went a little too far, in my view, in not speaking about human rights issues during that period. That was kind of off the table. I think you can do both. I kind of like the way the Reagan folks did it later. But I think it was a useful time in stabilizing relations between two superpowers and lessening the probability of a war between two nuclear powers.
The joke I've always enjoyed at the moment, there's so many, is when Brezhnev gives a tour of his cars, that some of the vehicles came from Richard Nixon as presents to Brezhnev, who loved to drive them. Showed them to his mother at the Kremlin. This is a joke. And she watched him be so proud of his Cadillac, and she started to weep, and he said, "Mama, Mama, why are you weeping?" She said, "Oh, Leonid, what if the Reds come back?" And so that was the temperament of 1972. We now go to 1990-91, when you were there. This is dealing with a country that's crumbling all around you. Did you see the end of the Soviet Union coming? Could you feel it in the streets of Moscow, Michael?
Yes, I did. In fact, I wrote a piece in the summer of 1990 in the San Jose Mercury News, because I was a young guy and I couldn't get it published at other places. But it compared the French Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, to what I was calling the Soviet Revolution at the time. This is a year and a half before the collapse, because I saw these patterns. This book by Crane Britton called Anatomy of Revolution had a big impact on me at the time. And I was seeing the phases, and the initial phase of reform under Gorbachev, I predicted, was going to lead to a more radical phase. And then the Jacobins would come in, and they did. That's the Yeltsin era. And then there would be a counter-revolution, as there oftentimes is. The Thermidor, as we called it in the French Revolution. I didn't know the name of the person, but in France, it was Napoleon. In the Bolshevik Revolution, it was Stalin. And in the Russian Revolution, it turned out to be Vladimir Putin. But in 1990-91, I knew this. It felt like a revolutionary moment for me. But we don't know how revolutions end, right? The collapse of the old order, the Ancient regime, doesn't mean we know how to predict what happens later. And it felt so much that way that I wrote a book. It's not a book, actually. It's a Hoover publication, which was a series of interviews, John, where I interviewed all the leaders from the liberals to the communists to the nationalists to the fascists, because I wanted to capture that moment in history that in the archives so that when people go and study what happened, they would feel that moment of uncertainty as I did back in 1990-91.
Did you feel personally at risk when you learned of the coup attempt that summer against Gorbachev? Americans, were they warned to start packing?
Well, I left in June of 1991 and then came back in October of 1991. So I was not there for the 3 days of the coup. But I'll tell you, as I was driving out, my last meeting with my academic advisor, Moscow State University, Apollon Davidson is his name. And he was an African specialist because I was there doing research on my dissertation. But I got pulled in to working with the small D Democrats. And I make no apologies for that. It was a very exciting time. And as I was going to the airport, literally that day, I said, I'll see you in the fall because I'd planned to come back. And he said, Mr. McFaul, you'll never be let back in this country. And I was shocked when he said that. And he said, we know what you've been doing here. We know you've been working with these other people. And we, our side, you know, that the KGB side he alluded to, we are taking over and we're not going to allow people like you ever to come back. And I remember thinking, you know, that was a very sobering conversation. His people did try to take over in August 1991, but they were thwarted. They were thwarted by the small D Democrats. His side lost. And in this round, my side won.
Now we come to that same moment that the U.S. makes a choice, because the Soviet Union ends at the end of that year. Yeltsin becomes the new chief in charge of the whole of the country, although it's not clear what the whole country is. The Soviet Right. Empire is breaking into pieces. The money's no good. I know because I've talked to men in Azerbaijan who were there at that moment in Baku. They had no reserves. They had nothing. They had nothing forward. They didn't know what to do with their oil. It was that way across the country. But Yeltsin takes charge. And again, it's a moment where the U.S. and her allies have choices to make. Do we send a military in or do we send diplomats in? We chose diplomats again. Was it the right choice, Michael?
Yes, it was definitely the right choice. It was definitely the right choice to engage with Yeltsin, as President Bush did and then Clinton did afterwards. They didn't write it away. You know, President H.W. Bush held on to Gorbachev because he was somebody we knew well. And we feared the collapse of the Soviet Union because there were nuclear weapons in other parts of the Soviet Union at the time. We feared that at the time. But once it happened, he made the right decision to lean in, engage, support Yeltsin as a Democrat. I think the mistake we made, Democrats and Republicans both in the United States, is we just thought it was going to, you know, they were going to become Democratic and it was the end of history, as my colleague here at Stanford, Frank Fukuyama, wrote very famously at the time. So we didn't invest into trying to make that happen. We just thought it was going to happen organically. Very different from what we did in World War II when we, you know, we occupied Germany, we occupied Japan to help them build their democratic institutions. But because the reason we did that in 45 and we didn't in 91, 92 is because in 45 there was a lingering threat called the Soviet Union. And we knew that if we let these collapsed states on their own, they would be taken over by the communists. There wasn't that lingering threat to the East in 1991-92. Had there been, had China been as powerful today as they back then as they are today, maybe we would have done more. But as a result, I think we were just too complacent. And I think had we put more effort in on both the political and economic side, we might have had different outcomes.
You write again and again, you're a liberal internationalist. I wasn't certain what that was before, but having now read your book, I am too, Michael. I confess it. Okay. So.
Bad term, though. We've got to get better terminology. Yes.
Okay. I'm McFaulite. Okay. Here we go. All right. Bill Clinton's campaigning for the presidency in 92. He's successful. However, he makes remarks, repeated remarks in those early days that we have to look to our own domestic concerns and that the world now has a peace dividend. Was that the wrong direction at the time? Because it felt very logical given the campaign needs. Was there more that could have been done during that campaign between H.W. Bush, who was running for re-election, and Bill Clinton to be clear that we were going to do more for Russia. What, I know it's 2020 hindsight, but you were there, Michael.
Yeah, that was a critical year. That was the first year of independence for Russia and Ukraine and Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan. All those countries were newly independent. And because the governor of Arkansas, his main slogan in 1992 was, "It's the economy, stupid." That constrained what President Bush was prepared to do to help consolidate those democracies and those market economies. And there's just no doubt about it that the timing of that event, that 92 election and the first year of independence in Russia was detrimental to consolidating the regime and the economy, the capitalist economy. Now, once President Clinton wins the election and is in power in 1993 as president, he gets this. He makes some big speeches about how we are in alliance with the ideas of democracy inside Russia. But by that time, it was too late. By the time he became president, the liberal reformist government led by Yegor Gaidar in 1992. And when I use the word liberal, I mean it in the classic sense. These are people that believed in freedom and democracy. They also believed in capitalism. They would have been very comfortable working as senior research scholars at the Hoover Institution. But they were already thrown out. They were already gone by the time 1993 came along. So that turned out to be a missed year that was, I think, rather consequential in terms of the history of Russia and U.S.-Russia relations.
One more detail, because you were there. You went back to Russia as a representative of people interested in talking about democracy all the time, and you had a ready-made audience. That audience, was it at that point empowered, or was it academics?
No, it was the government. It was 1992. I worked for something called the National Democratic Institute, which is one of the affiliates of something called the National Endowment for Democracy that Ronald Reagan established when he was president. And we were working directly with the author of the Constitution. We were, literally providing constitutional experts to talk about the pluses and minuses of a presidential system versus parliamentary, proportional representation as an electoral system versus the American system of first past the post. We worked with a lot of governors. There was such a demand for information. In fact, one of our most popular publications, John, was called How to Win Elections. It was a 6-volume study that we put out for politicians. And NDI, the group I work for, we were affiliated with the Democratic Party, but our brochure was actually from the Republican Party. Extremely popular. And I think I'm glad you asked that question, because we weren't there to foment revolution. We were invited by the Yeltsin government because they wanted to learn about democratic institutions at the time.
Michael McFaul is the author of Autocrats, Russia and China versus Democrats, the U.S. and its allies, and The New Global Disorder. We turn now to the People's Republic of China.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.